From the Schmoes No Network Studios in Los Angeles, California, it's time for Guilty Movie Pleasures. And now, here are your hosts, two of the guiltiest cats I know, Josh Macuga and Steve Simone.
What's up, Smovo? Not really too excited this week, are we, Steve?
That movie is really stinky.
It's... JT, this, the music's still going. There's no, I'm not getting any microphone out of Steve.
It's perfect.
Oh, there we go. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Good work. JT just treated the soundboard like the director treated this movie.
And that, yeah, this, treated our intelligence.
Good Lord. Listen, you know, I was excited for it because last week we had Christian Harloff on. We did The Last Dragon, which might be the greatest guilty movie pleasure of all time.
I love The Last Dragon.
And we were, Christian recommended we do Streets of Fire. A bunch of other Schmovillians had tweeted us about this. A very, very famous Schmovillian, Matt Brown, has been with the show for 3-4 years now. He's a great dude, tweets all the time, says this is one of his favorite movies of all time. He met the director. I got to tell you, I watched this movie. I don't get it.
I thought it was really stinky.
Yeah.
Like, it was so stinky. Like, I didn't even care. Like, sometimes you watch something and it's so awful, you're like, this is kind of great.
Right.
Like, when you have a friend that's so annoying, you're like, let's hang out with him all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, oh, my goodness. Like, I checked. I zoned out. I just got done watching it. I had never seen it.
Right. I'd never
seen
it.
I brought the DVD from you last night. You came by the comedy store like you were.
Deal.
Yeah, it was like an arms deal. Mm-hmm. And you just pass off the DVD. Yeah. I'm like, all right, wake up, watch this thing, go do the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. This was kind of like you hooked up. Everybody in school said she was the hottest girl in your school, right? Everybody's like, you got to hook up with Ashley. You got to hook up with Ashley. And then you get to Ashley and she doesn't have, like, she's got the weirdest boobs you've ever seen.
You're like, oh, man.
And third nipple. And, like, she's really hairy. You're like, oh, God,
dude,
we didn't see this.
This is so bad.
I mean, this is where we start. We start off, okay, let's talk about the positives up top.
Okay.
Diane Lane, smoking hot in this movie. Don't you think?
I like the chick that played Michael Pereira's sister.
Reva.
Yeah, Reva from Reva. Too Close for Comfort, right?
Correct.
That chick was hot.
She was a really good, I thought she was really good in this movie.
She was the only person that appeared to not be indicating their lines or just talking in exposition.
That's Michael Pere. Should we decide on a name?
I guess it's Michael Pere.
Michael Pere.
Let's try it that way.
Okay, Michael Pere. Okay, first, it starts off with Diane Lane. Her name is Ellen Aim, which is an awful name for a lead singer of a band.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that they just put that into a random name generator, or they just ask some guy in the lot. They're like, if you were going to date somebody that was a lead singer of a band, he's just like, Ellen Aim? Like, done.
Aim, because after this movie's done, you want to aim a gun right at your temple.
I would have rather had Ellen DeGeneres play the lead singer. Jesus. So this is... All right, listen. This song isn't terrible, like, with this beat up top. Because you know what this makes
that
you feel
80s
like?
Beat.
That 80s beat. And, like, if you're on BMX bikes with your buddies on the Ocean
We're
City
gonna
boardwalk...
We're going to go get some baseball cards.
Yeah.
And maybe buy a bottle rocket from your older brother.
You ride down the hill. You're really excited. You squeal the tires and you pull up.
What's up, nerds?
Right, exactly. So it starts off at this, like, awesome 80s club. She comes running out. She's just, like, singing the song. And she's got the weirdest backup band ever.
So bizarre.
They stink. She's actually not singing. It's Laurie Sargent is who's singing this song. I wrote down some things here.
Good.
Laurie Sargent of Fire Inc. is the name of the band. Fire Inc.
I wonder why they never made it.
1984 was the name of the year the movie came out. 1988, Fire Inc. broke up. So there's that. And so this song goes out, and then in, like, all we see, the entire movie basically takes place under elevated train tracks.
Yeah.
Like in Rocky in Philly, where the gym is underneath those L train tracks, right? But the whole movie, like, and all of Rocky doesn't take place under train tracks.
This right off the bat, I'm like, is this like a weird netherworld?
Right, because it says another time, another place.
Yeah, it's just weird.
It's really weird.
Because it's like 80s music, 50s clothes,
50s cars.
Yeah.
50s attitude, 50s hair. Cause then, okay, so then the concert starts and then in walks Willem Dafoe, who, as a young man is creepy looking, as an older man is creepy looking. He didn't grow out of his creepiness. If anything.
He's probably the nicest guy ever.
Oh, I know, right?
He's probably like, guess who made cupcakes?
Yeah.
It's your favorite from scratch. I mean, like watching you eat it. Josh, I mean, you like coconut, right? Taste this one. I remember. You said.
And you know,
probably the nicest guy ever.
And he probably, like, got this role and was like, I wonder what they're going to dress me as. And then they dress him as, like, Kind of a coal miner as Zoolander in all black leather overalls.
Yeah.
Everybody in this movie seemed to have an overall of some sort, right? So there he is. There's Willem Dafoe, right? And he has the what I guess you would consider that the reverse wave. Is that reverse wave haircut?
I don't know.
It's like a he's
kind of looks like a cobra.
He does look like a cobra. That's a really good call. He's a snake. He's an evil man. He's wearing like black leather duster, like he's in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Remember when Mac has the duster
in Always Sunny?
And he comes in and he just like they just raid the concert venue, and the guy who's running the concert, he's pissed that they're having a benefit show because he's not going to make any money, is Rick Moranis,
who played so against type in this.
I know. He's always so likable in this movie. Yeah. He's such a doucher.
Yeah.
And he plays the guy when you see, you know, when you're at a baseball game or you're at any kind of Hollywood event and you see a really hot girl with a really old, like, ugly dude, or just an ugly dude in general, and you're like, he's got money. That's what Rick Moranis is.
That's this entire city.
That's this whole place.
Ugh.
And so then Willem Dafoe and his biker gang, and because as soon as they're on motorcycles, you know they're bad people. It doesn't. Motorcycles.
That's how they're trying to set it up.
Right. Motorcycles have never been used as a good tool. Like, a guy doesn't show up in town on a motorcycle and be like, "Hi, I'm the local preacher here to save this town from the devil."
Yeah, but I know people that ride motorcycles in real life, and they're always the best people.
They're very – Court McCown.
Lazy screenwriting.
Great. Yes, exactly. Well, they – JT has something he'd like to say. JT?
Top Gun, Maverick starts off on a motorcycle.
That's true.
Come on.
Sorry about that. All right, JT corrected me on that one. So Maverick is the buck of the trend. But in gang terms, if there's a whole bunch of guys riding on motorcycles, let me just stereotype the whole thing.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of guys on motorcycles. More than likely, they are not good people.
Yeah. Unless Pee-wee Herman has a dance-off with them and then become best friends.
Yeah, very true. God, you keep bucking my stereotype,
right? That was great because, to me, the best part later, we're going to get to it, but I just want to say when Dottie shows up,
I was just going to say,
that's fantastic.
Ellen Ames' biggest fan is Dottie.
Dottie! Why can't we do Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
That's a guilty pleasure.
I don't know. I think it's just awesome. All the movies I think are awesome, people are like, you can't do something awesome. You have to watch this snooze fest for 2 hours with the guy from Eddie and the Cruisers trying to act like he knows karate.
So she gets kidnapped, and then you see it goes straight to a telegram, and Reva signs up like, "Tom, we need you back here. We need you back home. Come on back."
Yeah.
Reva, right? So then it just cuts to the train, and out walks, and there's nobody else on the train. I don't know if you noticed. There's never a passenger on the train the whole movie. He's the only person that rides the train.
Maybe it's a metaphor.
Maybe it's the fact that those trains look really shitty. Those trains are always dirty. And there he is. There's our buddy Tom Cody. He's crushing it.
Yeah.
In his duster over top of like a suspender high waisted pants that our dads may have worn in the '20s. Like our dads' grandfathers, you know, they come out of the steel mill, but they can't get their pants dirty on the bottom because then they got to wash it. So they hike them up with these suspenders, and like you come home and he takes it off and it just drops.
And he eats beans out of a can and fights somebody like this.
And that's how he fights in this movie. He's like he does like some of those slap hits, and he does the old man fighting.
Yeah, the first time you see that he's supposed to be a badass.
Yes.
Is that scene in the diner when he goes to see Reva, right?
Right. Which by this time, three plate glass windows have already been broken, and then he throws two more guys through more plate glass. So every window in this town is broken at this point.
Yeah.
Right? He goes to see Reva in the diner.
Weird thing with the knife.
With this butterfly knife.
Yeah.
Which we used to have this place in Pittsburgh. It was called Trader Jack's.
I'm already in.
Okay.
Anything with Trader in the front of it, I'm like, I'm listening.
Yeah. It was a flea market.
Nice.
And so townies could go and like trade their fleas or, you know, whatever, like their products of crap. And then there was like a big empty warehouse and you could buy anything. I'm talking, we got like bongs there, knives, fireworks, old records, posters of naked chicks.
Like that.
Yeah. And it smelled weird. You know that
like
smell?
Like mirrors that had like the Van Halen VH silk screens on it.
Yeah.
Like a Bart Simpson pinata.
Yes.
I love all that stuff.
It's like the surf mall. Remember the surf mall in Ocean City?
Yes.
It was like that, but like times five.
Want a Karate Kid headband? Check.
Check. Want a t-shirt of Spicoli that says dope on it? Check. Want a bed sheet of Reservoir Dogs? Check.
Alf sleeping bag? You got it.
You got it. Thanks, Brody. And so So we went to Trader Jack's and we all bought butterfly knives because we saw like a movie that was it wasn't this piece of crap,
yeah,
but it was a movie and you could wing the butterfly knife around and then
that sounds totally safe. How old were you?
12.
Perfect.
And I switched like the first day with the butterfly knife. I'm switching around and got a huge slice right in my finger. I had to go get stitches. My mom was like, "Where the hell did you get
this? Where did you get this?"
I was like, "Tom Cody, you bastard." So right off the bat, he's supposed to be the town badass and he's going to save the world.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be like an army guy, right?
Well, we get that after he goes into that bar and meets Kevin Costner's wife in Field of Dreams.
Oh yeah,
right. And she plays the ultimate tomboy, and she's like, "You're not my type." Basically, the '80s way of saying I'm a lesbian. I only like to eat out girls on a weekend.
Yeah, but don't they leave together?
Yeah, but right, she we'll says he's not his type. You know what I'm saying? So
oh
yeah, so she keeps muttering, "You're not my type, you're not my type."
And she lays out Chet from Weird Science.
Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was
that
awesome.
That scene was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Well, that's Bill Paxton with the dead tooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dead tooth bartender, Clyde the bartender. He goes in there. After talking to Reva, Reva's like, "Hey, Ellen Aim got kidnapped, yada, yada, yada." He goes over. He's like, "I've always been a tequila man." And the bottle of tequila looks like a bottle of root beer, by the way. It's got like a bottle cap on it. She punches out Clyde after he
hops over the bar.
Hops over the bar, grabs the tequila. They're out.
Yeah, because he was like, "I want to see your money." And she shows him money. And he was like, "I don't like your face." And she's like,
"Everybody's an asshole, right?" Yeah. And she's like, I'm a soldier, but I ran out of wars, was her line.
That is
a
tremendous line.
That is a good one.
I'm going to start using that, actually. All right, this movie's starting to grow on me a little bit. Okay. That was a great line.
We got a winner there. And then he's like, "I've always been a tequila man." He's like, "You always come armed?" Or no, he's like, "I like to shoot guns, but I didn't win no medals for it."
Oh, yeah.
So that was a good little exchange between soldiers.
So I go, "You think you're tough? I'm tough, too."
Yeah, right. And she's, by far, the most non-attractive. I mean, she's ugly, and for all intents and purposes, in this movie, she's not very attractive.
They try to make her look less attractive,
yeah,
for sure.
I mean, she's got this terrible hair underneath, like a leather
makeup,
bulb,
a weird hat,
yeah, gross. And always, she looks like she's still in army gear, but army in.
She's dressed like a little rascal. Like you expect to see Stymie high five her, and they're like, "Where'd Petey go?"
Weirdly enough, Dottie was the voice of Froggy in the Little Rascals movie.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there you go. Little fun fact for the crowd out there. And so she's like, "I need a place to stay." And then he's like, "You're not my type." Again, insinuating that she just loves scissoring chicks.
Oh, but then they go back to her place.
No,
I mean his place with Reva.
With Reva.
Right. And remember she was like, "I realize sometimes guys," like she says something about how she doesn't want to give it up right away. And
yeah.
And then Reva was like, "Well, my brother needs more chicks like that in his life."
Yeah. But she still doesn't. There's still, like, not a sexual attraction. There's no sexual attraction in this at all. So then he starts doing some reconnaissance or whatever in town. Again, town is disgusting.
Yeah, it's such a weird.
Like, all these towns and all these movies, when it's supposed to be the bad part of town, it always just looks like nobody's cleaned in a while. Like, why did people just stop cleaning places?
Just give up.
It's just clean it. Just,
I know.
I get really upset when places are dirty for no reason.
Yeah.
Listen, I understand that you live in the bad part of town, but your place doesn't have to be hideous.
Yeah.
Get some paint. Buy maybe a mop. Maybe some Pledge and dust your countertops.
Yeah, keep it clean.
Yeah, you don't have to eat out of old pots if you don't want to.
I agree.
Have a job at a diner. Spend a little money on your pots.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he does some reconnaissance and he meets Billy Fish, played by Rick Moranis,
yep,
who is the scummy record producer, concert promoter, manager.
Yes, completely not likable.
Do you know Matt Portman?
All.
Do you know Matt Portman?
No.
Matt Portman's a stand-up. He used to live in L.A. Now he lives in Chicago. He looks exactly like Rick Moranis in this movie and to this day.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
That's a great look.
Every year for Halloween that I know him, he was a different Rick Moranis character.
That's hysterical.
Which was awesome. His Honey, I Shrunk the Kids outfit, incredible. Matt
I
Portman,
love
if you're
Rick
watching,
Moranis.
Or if you guys know Matt Portman, tell him to watch this episode we talked about him. He's a great kid. Anyway, so they meet Billy Fish and he's like, I'll do this for 10 grand. And McCoy's sitting right there. And she's like, I could use a job. And he's like, you can't, dude. You're a woman. And she's a soldier, yada, yada. And then he cuts her in for 10%.
Yep.
Then he goes to his buddy who's the mechanic slash guns dealer.
Yeah.
And he's like, you get ready for this. These are all custom made. And he gets it out. And these just look like normal, shinier guns.
Yeah, old timey guns, too.
Nobody in this movie has a machine gun. Did you notice that?
Yeah, no machine
it's all
guns.
Like, it's all like lever action rifles.
Like cowboy guns.
Yeah.
Those sniper rifles.
I think the budget ran out at like really good guns because they spent everything on set design.
No,
terrible.
I think it was actually a conscious decision.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
To make it worse?
Yeah. this movie was just really that not, it was that this, sure. this bad.
Now, the funny thing about it is there's no, like, real plot development. There's no character development. Really, there's, like, a couple lines. You, like you said, speaking of exposition, then he's like, all right, we're going to go into yeah. the battery, which is supposedly the bad area of town. Now, they just, he has a stolen car. The cops pull him over. They don't say anything about the stolen car. He just says he stole the car, and no, there's nobody comes looking for this car in this neighborhood. It's the only nice looking car in the neighborhood. But when you're Tom Cody, I guess.
This movie was so bad.
So they go to the bomber's part of town, which is, again, well, that the best part of the movie is right now, is when they run into Ed Begley Jr.
That's what I thought, as the crazy homeless guy for no reason that comes out like a Muppet.
Black grease all over his face. Yeah. He's just like, hey, what are you guys doing here?
And he looks at Rick Moranis, you're scared, aren't you? Yeah, dude.
Yeah, because you just creeped out of a smoky hole, yeah. and you're Ed Begley Jr., you're scared as is. And so he's like, yeah, you want to know where the girl is? She's on the second floor of Torgy's.
Yeah, how'd he know that?
Well, everybody knows it because they have to go to Torgy's. We've already been, it's already been established they're going to be at Torgy's.
Yeah, but how does he know what room she's in?
Because he said, because he lives on the streets, man. And he can see in a window, man.
Dude, there were so many good actors in this.
Yeah.
Like
legendary actors.
Yeah.
Besides Michael Pare, who didn't really do much after this because this movie ruined his career.
I know.
Diane Lane, Ed Begley Jr., Madigan has been in a ton of stuff. What's his name? Rick Moranis. He was in everything for a while.
Bill Paxton.
Ed Begley yeah. Jr., for yeah. Christ's sake. So, Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, it's insane.
So they get to... He's like, listen, I'm going to take this place by myself with McCoy. Or McCoy. What? Just, all right, here's how it's going to happen. We're going to wing it.
Yeah.
We're just going to get the girl with guns. You better bring this car in 15 minutes. You hear me? 15 minutes. And yeah. Rick Moranis puts him to fight, and she's like, yeah, you shut up.
It's so stupid.
Moranis is like, fine, whatever you want. McCoy goes in
there.
Well,
the best is, like, throughout this whole point, there's, like, this tension between Michael Pare and Moranis over the girl.
You didn't take it. What, they had a thing? Yeah, no yeah. shit, they had a thing. Well, he's going to go.
Wait, you think she might like that male model more than she likes me? Like, let me tell you something. I got the brains, you see.
Yeah. You can't. I got a bow tie on. That means I'm special. You got your high waisted.
I don't like doing reviews like this. I like to celebrate things. I don't like. I hate when people are like, "Isn't it shitty?" And I'm like, "Yeah, this really was." I said the S word. I don't even like cursing.
You don't like cursing. I'm sorry, Steve.
All right, go on. Next thing I know, he's shooting motorcycles.
Well,
with the cowboy gun.
With the cowboy gun that is literally shooting out fireballs. That
yeah,
part,
because I was like, these motorcycles are blowing up every time.
Blowing up.
And then the one motorcycle doesn't blow up, then it skids off into another one, then it blows up.
That's a Simpsons scene. That's a total Simpsons scene. McCoy goes in there. A guy hits on her. While she is dancing on the bar.
Yeah, that was the weirdest
the
thing.
The creepiest thing. I thought that they were like, the creepy dude is singing a song. There's a creepy he-she on the bar dancing around. Now, here's what I always... Okay, listen. I worked at a bar for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Okay? When the bar would get crowded and rowdy, it was the worst thing for me because you couldn't control the crowd. You really couldn't. And you were just hoping for that time when it closed down.
Yeah.
Right? And then you walked and it was like a war zone. And then the next day you showed up and it was totally clean.
Yeah.
Who cleans Torchy's? Who control? You can't kick out the bombers. If they want to stay there all night and day, they stay there all night and day and you have to work.
Yeah.
You know, that's always the plot holes I think about, is that people don't think about in that situation. It's like, those poor bartenders, they get screwed. They have to work at Torchy's. They make no money. They have to deal with a he-she dancing in the bar and the weirdest man possible. And everybody's like yelling, screaming, fighting, throwing stuff. That's why when Swayze came into the Double Deuce.
That would be, yeah.
Well, that's a GMP. That's.
Please, can we do that one soon? I love that. Like, to me, that movie's not bad. It's awesome.
It's not. It's a that's a
Roadhouse
good movie pleasure.
Is awesome.
It's incredible.
It's awesome.
We will do that movie. Okay. I promise. JT's back there smiling. JT yeah. is into it. He yeah. also wants us to do Over the Top as well. So there's that.
I haven't seen Over the Top in a while. I just this thing. You know what's so funny? I literally just got done watching this movie, mm-hmm. and you're reliving scenes, and I'm like, oh yeah, like I blocked it out that mm-hmm. fast.
All right, well, so McCoy goes in there. A guy hits on her. He's like, let's go bang. And she's
yeah,
let's go bang.
What did they call the room? Wasn't it was like the party room or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, something stupid like that. And he walks in and then she pistol whips him, knocks him out. Then she goes looking for the girl. And then he's up on the roof just snipering motorcycles, exploding, exploding, exploding. He runs into the thing. He grabs her. He like quick as a knife, runs her out. They're, you know, like, he gets her out. Moranis pulls up. They get out of there. They, like, shoot a bunch of people, whatever. And then they get back to the Richmond, but now Defoe is pissed.
Yeah.
Raven, whatever his name. His last name is Raven, like Braddock. Don't call a man Raven, whatever you do. It's not a hard thing. Like, call him Crow. If you're going to call him a black flying bird, call him Crow. I know there was a movie called The Crow.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
And there was a pro wrestler called Raven that was pretty sweet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ECW Sorry. Fame.
Oh, my
he was
bad.
Pretty sweet.
Okay. Well, there's always – apparently, according to my stereotypes, there's always an exception to the rule, Stephen.
Yep.
Okay?
That's what we're learning today, not to stereotype, not to
Thank
judge.
You. Thank
Kids,
you.
If that's all you get out of this
– Yeah.
Don't judge everybody. Everybody deserves to be loved.
So they
Even the people behind this stinky movie. They tried their best.
They tried their best.
Yeah.
So then...
This wasn't for me.
Apparently. So then they get back. They get back to the Richmond, and they're like, oh, somebody went in and just blew up the battery, and they're looking for him. But they get... Like, Rick Moranis takes the girl, and this is like the rainy makeout sex scene, and then we get through that, right?
Yeah, well, there was. How did they wind up on the bus with that other band that sings the awesome song?
Oh, because their car got, like, stopped at the thing, and they had to dump
the car. Then they get on the bus.
They get on the bus.
Yeah, because
the
guy
black
was
band.
Like, nobody tells me what to do with it, and then he pulls out a gun, and he's like, okie doke, get on the bus. I think that was their attempted humor. See, this was one of my major. There's so many flaws with
this
thing, right?
Of course,
And it's like, I don't like, but it's like, is it an action movie? Is it like almost like a sci-fi world? Is it supposed to be a comedy? I don't understand what it was supposed to
be. It's like a rom action movie.
Rom action. Okay.
Right? So, because he's in love with the girl still, but he realizes he can't be with her.
Yeah,
but
can
it's
we
an
even touch
movie.
On that? Like
we'll,
the girl
we'll
that gets
that.
Kidnapped yeah. was Michael Perez.
Well, we know that. As soon as she gets kidnapped and he shows up in town, we know that he's coming for the girl.
Yeah.
It's not hard to figure out. The most beautiful girl in this crappy part of town where everybody's a hideous Dick Tracy character.
Yeah, it's so
and
weird.
The only good-looking guy... compared to Rick Moranis and like Bill Paxton with a dead tooth is Michael Paré. It's kind of like comparing Tom Brady to nine little leaguers. You know what I mean? Nine Pop Warner players. Michael Paré. Anyway, so they get back, they have the sex scene, or no, they meet the black guys in the van and they start singing doo-wop, which is maybe the best part of the movie.
Yeah, those guys were talented.
They were pretty good. And Ellen Ames like, yeah, you can open for me. And Rick Mayer's like, you can't do that.
And then how did Dottie get on the bus?
Because she was the biggest Ellen Ames fan. She saw her when they got back to the you know, thing and they rescued her back in the Richmond. Was their part of town. So then the cops are like, you can't do this. And then here comes Raven. He's going to start a fight. He wants to take Ellen Ames back.
Yeah, they blow through the cop barricade. Okay, this is another thing I didn't understand.
Okay.
Like, I seriously just, I'm like, wait, what's happening here?
Right.
They hijack the bus after they blew up the Raven. Then there's the police barricade.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to just get through the police barricade by talking. Then Rick Moranis shows up.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got this. Yeah. I know how to hit. And he tries to pay off the cops.
Right.
Then the cops are like, yeah, you're awfully trying to fast to get us off this bus and real easy to try to pay us or whatever, something stupid.
Yeah.
So they're like, search the whole bus. Now they blow through that cop barricade.
Yeah.
Right? Because the cops are fugitives, I'm guessing, because of what they did to the bad guy motorcycle gang.
I'm guessing, because that's illegal.
Yeah.
You know, the bad guy motorcycles had
shooting motorcycles.
A girl.
Yeah. All right. But then the next scene, they pretty much show up at a police station.
Yeah.
And
to bring back Ellen Aim, like, hey, she's back.
We did it. Yeah.
Whoops, yay.
And
us.
It's like, wait, there was APB for you guys.
Well, there was, but they never saw who it was. So the cops, like, you know who blew up? They're like, no, we just found her on the side of the street or something like that.
Right.
Okay. So now Raven's getting pissed. He wants to know who's who, what. And
yeah, because he threatens him before. He was like, okay, now they're going to have a showdown, essentially, like a cowboy movie.
Right, it's a cowboy movie. So this is the part of the movie where whoever did the writing here, and this movie is rated PG, by the by.
Yeah.
Okay. They're up on the train tracks, like, they're back in love to a certain extent, and they're like, there's still this thing, and he's like, I got to go back in another way.
Yeah, well, because, okay, she's mad at him. There's...
Some sexual tension of sorts.
Yeah, like Diane Lane and the guy from Eddie and the Cruisers.
Right. I guess we have to watch Eddie and the Cruisers to redeem?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Okay.
She was like, I can't believe he had to pay you to do this or something. He was like, there was a time I wouldn't have done it for money or whatever. But then when he finally does get paid, he takes $1,000
for McCoy
for the Field of Dreams chick
and
then throws $9,000 back at him. Then she follows him outside what did you want me to do? Yeah. And then they make out in the rain and then do sex.
Yeah, and then do sex. And then Raven comes calling. He's going to take the town back, right? And he blows
and
that.
The police have their plan where they're like, we don't want you here, Eddie and the Cruisers guy. Right. We got a plan. We're going to have a lot of guns.
Yes. And he blows that horn.
Yeah, that was kind of hysterical. That was kind of sweet. Like, yeah. The bad guy Raven shows up, the guy from Spider-Man, and he's on a motorcycle. And then the cops are like, we're ready for you. And there's like three cops. And Raven's like, oh, are you? And he takes out a referee air horn, like the type of thing you would have used in high school if somebody was taking foul shots and gotten kicked off the bleachers.
Yes.
And then like a million motorcycle guys show up.
Yeah, exactly. And
And then Chet from Weird Science is there just to watch.
Yes.
The streets are desolated.
Yeah. But before that is when – now I'm getting confused. Cause
before that is the scene you told me to look out for.
Yeah.
And I must have – that must have been when I went to go get I was so broken by this point.
He's got
to
go
– if it wasn't for this podcast, I would have stopped watching this.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
7 minutes.
Okay. So he has to go like back or something and she fights and she's like, you can't go back alone. He's like, I got to do it. And she's like, no. And he just – punches her in the face.
He punches
Ellen Aim in the face, like really hard. This is a dude who's been taking out motorcycle gangs with his fist. He's supposed to be the hardest guy in 19 counties in wherever the F they are underneath train tracks. And he cold clocks her and McCoy is right there. And she's like, women. Psh. Like she basically
oh my gosh.
He basically he hits a woman. Knocks her out. That's his solution, is beating a woman. JT, he's shaking his head back there. Is beating.
Because I remember I was like, oh,
Rice this girl.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's terrible. He knocks this girl out and they're just like, well, I'll take her here. Don't you worry. I'll meet you around the corner. We'll meet back. And then this is when he and Defoe fight with train hammers. So he comes roaring around. The cops are waiting. Defoe's waiting there. He's like, this is between me and you, right? You took out my gang. I'm going to take you out, whatever. And again, it's still Michael Pare and Mrs. Kevin Costner and some cops. And they're like, no, this is a one-on-one fight between me and you. And the dude recommends, he's like, why don't we try something different? And they just hand him two train hammers, which are basically miniature sledgehammers. They're lighter weight sledgehammers.
Okay.
With that have like harder things. And then this is when they go into, know how to fight with these things. And they keep blocking it with it. And one thing leads to another.
Then Michael Pare wins, but instead of smashing his head,
he throws the hammer.
Hammer, and now they fight with their fists.
Now they do the old timey fight. He takes off the jacket. He's just got the suspenders on, and he beats Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe takes off, they push him away, and they're about to like fight, and then Clyde is left.
Yeah, he ran because he got scared. You think?
Yeah. And he, because of the horn and all the motorcycles, he takes off and comes back with like 150 local youths with Annie Oakley guns.
Yeah, everybody has guns.
And then they leave. Movie's basically over.
Yeah.
They've saved the day.
Yeah, because Michael Pare wins. But tell him how he wins the fight. It's so ridiculous. Like, the fight scene even sucked. Like, the railroad hammer thing was stupid. Like, it didn't pay off.
No.
The stakes didn't get heightened.
No, he didn't hit him anywhere near with it.
They're rolling through motorcycles for some reason, and then the bad guys aren't taking cheap shots or anything.
Nothing.
Whatever. And then he, like, hits him a couple times, and then Willem Dafoe is standing there. He literally just pushes him over.
He's just like, you're knocked out. You're done. Done. Yeah. He's because he finds him, you know, a little bit of solace in his soul there, and he feels bad for Willem Dafoe now. I don't know. So then they have like this heart to heart before Ellen Aim goes on stage, because now we cut to the best part of the movie, which is I Can Dream About You. JT, can you play If I Can't Hold You Tonight?
I didn't realize that song came from this movie.
This is a great song.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. Which one would you prefer? I Can Dream About You or Rhythm of the Night, DeBarge from Last Week's Last Dragon?
Bro, that's tough. This is good car cruising
music. This is good. This is, you know, like, I feel like our dads would have listened to this while they were taking us to get ice cream into Jersey Shore.
Just feel it, buddy. Don't listen. Feel it. Yeah, and you can get sprinkles.
And the band, the bus that they drove through the police art barricade is who's singing this. They're opening for... And
this is tremendous.
This is great. The crowd's going nuts. They finally get their big break. And Rick Moranis says to the guy running the levers, all of a sudden you need levers to run a concert venue. We're going to make a lot of money. Right?
Yes.
And now we cut to the back, and Michael Pare and Ellen Aim are having their final goodbye, and he's like, listen, I can't be the guy carrying your guitars, right?
Yeah.
But if you ever need me, I'll be there, right? So yeah. He's basically saying, good luck with everything, but if you ever get kidnapped by another road gang...
I'm here.
This was originally supposed to be a trilogy, just so you know. There is no other movies. The last song, which is called... what is it, JT? Something about, this is what it feels like to be young. This is what it feels to be young. Tonight is the night it feels... So they play this song, and when Joel... This was originally supposed to be the name of the movie, was this what it means to be young. And when Joel Silver saw the weekend box office, this is what it means to be dead.
Wow.
Because this movie cost so much money to make. And this is like a Meatloaf piano at the beginning. Yeah. And she's all excited, and this is like perfect motorcycle riding music. And basically, he walks off with his giant suitcase and his duffel bag, and McCoy pulls up in the still stolen car.
Yes.
She's like, you need a lift or something handsome. And she's like, I told you you're not my type. And then they cruise off in the distance, and then Gary throws that, and that's the movie.
Yeah.
It's
really bad.
I going into it, it's called Streets of Fire. There were some crazy-looking action scenes in the trailer. I thought this is going to be like a dark, crazy movie that's going to be a lot of fun with some cool music.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was going to be.
No. This movie was it was as bad as it gets.
Yeah, I was a little leery because I hadn't really heard of it.
Right.
And I would have thought... If it was awesome,
well, I never heard The Last Dragon.
That's my point. There are certain things that go through where you're like, oh, I might really get rewarded with a gem.
Right. We unfortunately did not get rewarded with a gem.
Yeah.
But listen, you know, sometimes you don't date tens. Sometimes you don't even get fives. Sometimes you get a three at 2 a.m. at a bar. Sometimes your mom hooks you up with, you know, Nancy from around the corner, and you go out with her just as a favor.
Yeah.
And she's a very nice girl. But she's just not your type.
This movie just wasn't my type.
Wasn't your type.
I think we did learn some valuable lessons.
Don't hit women on train platforms.
Never. Yeah, like never, guys.
Guys.
I mean, seriously.
Don't do that. It's not even a cool thing to write in a movie. I don't even think
it's funny to joke
it's
about.
It's not. He knocks her out, Steve. And that's his ridiculous thing. And they put that in the movie.
You know, it's bizarre. I remember when you gave me the DVD last night, you were like, bro, there's a scene that you're going to be like, what the F?
Yeah.
And... As fate would have it, that was because I'm watching the movie. I'm like, this is atrocious, and I had to get up to get a snack because I live for snacks.
Of course,
I'm like Alf. Yeah. Before you get up for that final snack, I want you to know I'll be right back. You remember they would do those buttons before they cut away the commercials,
and Ellis would run to the cabinet. Oh god!
gotta get food.
Dunkaroos, Golden Grahams.
Like he's calling in a chopper strike in Nam. Dunkaroos. Okay. So I guess we learned that stereotypes, no. You brought that up just anecdotally,
sure.
And it's like, don't believe in those.
No.
And then I think this was a great motivator for kids, because I know a lot of young people listen to this podcast and check us out on YouTube.
Yeah.
Write your own movie.
Yeah.
Because it couldn't be worse than this.
No, really. This should be.
This movie got made with major stars, and there was high expectations.
Huge. Basically, like we said, tons of great actors came out of this. We're glad it never made a trilogy. I feel like next week we should do a movie.
We should do something really awesome. And if it's guilty, I don't know. You want to do Roadhouse because we know it's awesome?
Should we do Roadhouse?
Can we?
Yeah.
Because if it's like stinky, we need one that's like... We need an upbeat number. Something that's awesome.
Yes.
Something that'll get
this
me passionate.
This was the terrible monster ballad that Poison tried to write, but it wasn't. Right after Every Rose Has Its Thorn, they tried to make like Every Tulip Has a Stem.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, ah, crap. This one stinks.
Every cactus has water inside. It's just not the same, buddy.
It's not the same. We tried to go down a road, Schmovo. You gave us a stinker, but we still love you nonetheless. Guys, we've been averaging some awesome numbers on iTunes.
Thank you
so much for downloading. Thanks for commenting on iTunes.
I want to let you guys know, I have a new CD coming out. It's called Remember This. You can get it up on iTunes. You can pre-order it. If you see stinky movies like this and you need to be lifted, let's check out my CD.
And we'll put the link to it in the description on this video on YouTube. And so check out – we'll try and comment on as many as you comment. We're busy, guys, so we try to get to as many as we can.
And I just don't know how to do it
and
yet.
He's going to get there. We're going to get there. Subscribe on iTunes. Tell all your friends. Give us 5 stars. Leave a comment. We know there's a ton of downloaders out there, so if you guys are listening, please comment. Tell all your friends. Share it. Tweet it. We love you guys so much. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, guys. Schmoes, I love you. Roadhouse next week.
We'll be at the Double Deuce.
All right.
from producers Christian Harloff, Mark Ellis, and the entire Schmoes No Network crew, we would like to thank you for listening to Guilty Movie Pleasures. What's your pleasure? Special thanks to Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos, the author of Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, in stores now. To watch or listen to other Guilty Pleasure movie episodes or other episodes of the Schmoes No Network shows, get movie news, or to join the conversation, be sure to visit schmoesno.com. I'm the Pit Boss, and this has been a presentation of the Schmoes No Network.